Hey everyone, you're listening to Topping the Curve, and this is your host, Sephora Gray. Hi everyone, welcome back to Topping the Curve. On today's episode, I have Vanessa
Omar Gaman
with me, and she is going to be talking about what it's like to be a big law associate. So Vanessa, please introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, my name is Vanessa Omar Gaman. I am a third year associate at a litigation firm in DC. So I can talk a little bit about a little bit about me. I was born in Nigeria, but raised in Boston. I went to a public high school in Boston, and then I went to Boston College for undergrad, and then I went straight through to law school. So I went to Georgetown for law school. While I was at Georgetown, I was pretty involved in a bunch of activities. I was on the Georgetown Law Journal, which we kind of call colloquially the main journal. I was also on the moot court team while I was in law school. So that's appellate advocacy. I did a clinic when I was in law school. I did the landlord tenant clinic, which was representing tenants in landlord tenant disputes. And so I've done a lot of litigation focused work while I was in law school. And so it's no surprise that I ended up at a litigation law firm in DC.
That's actually super interesting, Vanessa, because I talked to you before when I was deciding on firms, and I don't think I ever knew that you did all that stuff in law school. So that's really interesting. But I'm interested. So did you go into law school knowing that you wanted to do litigation and then you kind of like focused your career path that way, or did it just kind of like work out that way?
No, I did not know that. I will say it's always interesting talking to people who are currently in law school or about to start law school, because I find that most people actually know what they're doing a lot more than I did. I didn't really know what I was going to law school for. I knew that I was I liked writing, and I knew I liked research, and I'm Nigerian, so the options were slim. It was doctor, lawyer, engineer, and I was suck at science and math. So I did not come into law school with a plan. I kind of fell into everything I did. And I had some more sort of senior students to look up to that I was like, oh, I really want to be like this person. And this person is doing like these really cool, interesting things. So like, I'm going to try them out and see if I like them. So I was really lucky that I did enjoy my activity. I loved moot court, for example. And before I got to law school, I didn't even know what that was. But no, I really fell into everything. And luckily it all worked out. I actually like being a lawyer, thank God. But no, I did not go in with like a really good plan, but I had really good role models at Georgetown. I had people in Balsa that I looked up to, and I was like, ooh, like, you know, let me talk to this person and get a sense from them, like what are the things that they're involved in and why they're involved in those things. So good role models.
So kind of like transitioning now over into like, you left law school, came to the firm. Can you talk a little bit, just generally speaking, what was your first year like? What did you experience? What were your expectations? Just kind of the whole nine.
Yeah. So I went to a firm that I summered at. So I knew the people generally and had a general sense of what life was like at the firm. But I think, you know, being a summer is great. I say it's like the best job one can ever have, but it is different than being a full-time associate. And so I don't know if I had any real expectations on what the day-to-day life was going to be like. I was more just concerned with, are the people as nice as they seem to be when I was summering? And they were, and they are still, or they're still pretending for, you know, the last 3 years. But, you know, I didn't really have any expectations going in, particularly because I already knew I was going to be leaving to clerk. I got a clerkship offer when I was in law school. My judge just had like a 1 year work requirement. So like, you know, I was like, how much can I really get out of just 1 year at a firm? And I was shocked that I had a very substantive experience my first year. I was involved with a lot of really interesting cases. I actually got to argue my first case, the experience that I was in Maryland expecting. So that was a pro bono case where I got to write like an opening brief and a reply brief, and I got to argue. I got that experience where I was doing an argument as a first year, which I was not expecting. I had just gone to a meeting where they talked about the pro bono opportunities, and that was one of them. And I remember telling a partner, like, hey, I don't have any real appellate experience outside of moot court. And they're like, it's fine. Like, you'll be fine. Like, go ahead. And that's the firm's approach to most things. If you just ask for opportunities, like if even if you've never done them before, they're like, yeah, sure, why not? So I got to do that. I also got to go to an arbitration in New York, which was really exciting. Because we were so busy, we had so many witnesses, I got to like do witness prep by myself with no, what I call adult supervision. No partners were in the room. And I had witnesses that I was the only one who prepped them. Like no one else saw them. I did all the prep with them. They got, you know, on the little, what would be the equivalent of a stand and testified. And I was so nervous because I was like, if they mess up, you know, it's on me. But they were fine. My witnesses were great. You know, they did a great job. And I think it showed a lot of confidence in that they had in me to allow me to like operate independently at the firm. So I was shocked by the amount of substantive work I got to do as a first year. And especially because I was only there for a year and they knew that, but you know, it was one of the reasons why I came back to the firm after my clerkship, because I felt like I wasn't just, you know, a first year sitting in a room doing doc review. I was really being an attorney and like learning how to be a better lawyer.
Yeah. And I want to go back to something you said, because you mentioned, you know, you summered at the firm and then subsequently came back. But so I'm wondering if you think that your experience at the firm is kind of related to the fact that you summered there. And what why I'm asking is because, you know, there are a lot of people who maybe they summer at one firm and then they go clerk immediately and then just go to another firm, or maybe they summer at one firm and then for some reason just get in, do 3L OCI maybe and get an offer at another firm. So do you think that your experiences came about because you were a summer at the firm, or do you think it makes a difference? Like, should you try to summer at the firm you want to go to? What's your thought process there?
Yeah, I definitely think that you should try to summer at a firm that you, I think if you're going to do a summer, you should think about this is a place that I may want to work at long term. I think it's just easier to get into a firm if you summer there. It's just an easier transition. You don't have to deal with like applying for jobs later on. So if you can do it, I think you should. I went into the summer program, sort of the summer OCI thing, thinking like this is where I want to at least start my career. But, you know, I will say that I have many friends who didn't, like, you know, they summered one place and ended up somewhere else. And so it's not the end all be all. And I definitely always try to like tell people who are going through OCI now, like, you know, no matter what the end result is, like, don't think this is like, this is it, right? Like, you can always apply for things as a 3L or apply for things, you know, once you graduate or even 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But I do think it's good to go into OCI with the image of like, this is somewhere that I at least would start, like think about starting my career. So for me, that's how I went into it. And I knew that like wherever I was going to be at a, as a summer, I would do at least the beginning years of my career there. And I think at my firm particularly, it is a bit easier, I think, to be there as a summer and then come back as opposed to trying to lateral in. I think it's a little bit trickier and a little bit more difficult to get in later, but it's not impossible, right? People do it all the time. So I would say, I think OCI is a great way to get into a firm early. Yeah, for sure.
And so another thing you mentioned, you talked about, you know, how when you came in, you had your clerkship offer and you knew you were only going to be there before a year and then you were going to leave to go clerk. And, you know, the clerkship process for us, it's still going on, but you know, Oscar opened up back in June. People are still looking, people are still doing interviews, but kind of just interested. Do you think that your expectations, because I know you said you got tons of substantive experience and you were kind of, you know, surprised about that because they knew you were going to go clerk. Do you think that people should look out for that in firms that they're looking for, or should they just kind of not even worry about, oh, am I going to actually get work if I have to just go leave and clerk?
I think you should absolutely look for it because, you know, a year is enough time to do a lot. Like I said, I went to not a trial, but I did an arbitration and I did an oral argument. And I had other cases that I haven't talked about in more detail, but that I got other opportunities on. So I do think it's completely possible to get those opportunities, you know, even if you're there just there for a year. And it depends on the firm, right? Like my firm is really good about trying to be intentional. For example, I am leaving again to clerk at some point, and I had a partner at the firm say like, hey, we've got a couple trials that fit in kind of perfectly with like your timeline for being here again. So like, would you like to get on this case? And like, that's great that the firm is looking out for that, right? That's great that the firm knows I'm, you know, my schedule and is trying really hard to get me substantive experiences while I'm there. So I do think that's something to look out for in a firm. you know, but on the other hand, I know people who know they're not going to be at their firm long term. And so if you're just like, I'm just here to make some money while I, before I do my clerkship, I think it's totally fine to not be as concerned. But for me, because this is my firm is somewhere where I am contemplating staying long term and contemplating a future here, it was important for me to be somewhere that, like, while I'm here, even if it's just a year or 2 years, that I am getting exposure to different partners, working on different kinds of matters, like building myself up as an attorney. And even if I don't stay here, like post clerkship, I want to be able to interview places and say, like, here are all the things that I've done. So I would take the gap year as just like, you know, like, oh, it's just a gap year and I'm not going to do much. Like, no, there's a lot you can learn and there's a lot you can develop in the year prior to doing a clerkship.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that I was going to ask you about a little bit later, but I'll just ask you now. So you said, you know, you do know some people who are kind of just like, you know, I'm going to be here for a year or two and then I'm going to go. I'm here to make money. And I think a lot of people, you know, maybe particularly people of color and, you know, maybe some non-people of color too, but I'm sure. But they come into law school and they're like, you know, I'm going to go to big law for 2-3 years. I'm going to leave. I'm going to pay off some debt and then I'm going to leave and go public interest or go into the government. And I think that's a common notion, but I'm kind of wondering, you know, is that something people should kind of, you know, leave a little bit of leeway for? Because I think that was my thinking as well. You know, I'm not immune to that either, but I think the big law experience thus far, of course, I mean, I've done 2 summers, so it's definitely different, but you can probably speak to this. The experience, I think, may be a little different than what you thought it would be. And you can find, you know, or I guess I should ask you, have you found, you know, like, oh, and is this something that people should be more open to in terms of staying long term?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I think, so when I was younger, I used to be the kind of person that like planned out my entire life. And I won't say like it's a bad thing because I think it's a reason why I am where I am today. But I was definitely like, okay, this year I'm going to do this. And then in 5 years, I'm going to do this. I have now made an effort to not do that anymore because it's kind of hard for me not to do it. And so I no longer plan out my life where it's like, okay, I'm going to do big law for X amount of years and then I'm going to go do this next. And I think it's very stressful. I now live every day in the moment. And so I have told myself, as long as I'm enjoying the work I'm doing, I'm going to stick around. Once I no longer enjoy it and I no longer find it fulfilling, if I don't feel like I'm learning anything new or if I'm not interested, then I might just, you know, bounce. So I think that I want to encourage people more to just be like open in general, whether it's like open to doing big law or open to staying in big law, but just like, don't feel the need to be like, okay, I'm only doing this for 3 years and then I'm going to leave. It's like, life does not always work out the way you plan it. My original plan was to do like 2 clerkships right out of law school and then do big law for this. And it just hasn't worked out that way at all. Like it's been interesting. I've been all over the place. And so I have no like grand plans. If I don't know if that's answering your question of like, you know, how long would you be?
That definitely answers it.
Yeah. Your question, interestingly enough, made me think about a partner at a firm who once told me that looking at my resume, he could tell I wasn't interested in big law and that he would change my mind, which I always think about that. Cause I'm like, I don't know what that means. Right. Like, I have a lot of like, I care about human beings type thing on my resume, but like it's not counter to being in big law. I think
it's like, oh, you can't care about human beings and being like, in big law.
I don't know. I'm like thinking about my resume. Like, I mean, I, you know, I entered the human rights first office, but I think I can care about human rights and be in big law. I don't think those things are, you know, contradictory. And I do think that big law gets a bad rep of like being like, we're just like these evil, you know, monsters who represent horrible people. And I maybe am sipping the Kool-Aid a little bit, but I think that we actually do a lot of good work too. And I say too, because yeah, sometimes we do represent people that, I mean, are not the best human beings ever maybe, but no, like we do a lot of good work and I'm proud of the work that we do. And I'm proud of the clients that I've represented at least. And so I feel like I can do a lot of really good work in this sphere. Particularly where like I, at my firm, at least we have this really great program where you can actually do a secondment for 6 months and go work at the public defender's office. And it's something that I've like gone back and forth about, cause I think it'd be a really interesting way to do some, like spend a lot of time, you know, giving back. And so I think people should be more open to big law. I don't think people should just, I think people who like, don't even give it a shot, who are just like, oh, I know I'm going to hate it. Sometimes I think that's a little unfortunate because it's like, you could just do a summer and see, right? Like, you know, maybe you won't hate it as much as you think. And so, but once people get into Big Law, if they have a plan to just do for 2-3 years and leave, like, I think that's fine. But if you find yourself actually enjoying the work, you know, you should allow yourself the opportunity to learn. Cause I think Big Law is a great place to start your career. I can't think of anywhere else where you're going to learn more from some of the smartest, brightest people in the career. I'd like to see more, particularly Black, like, attorneys. I would like to see more people like in Big Law. And that's something I'm not really shy about talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so while you were in, you know, at the firm, your first and your second year, what was your experience in terms of learning to adjust to the workload, you know, learning to also still have a social life, and just how did that play out for you?
Yeah. Social life. That's a really, I am very intentional about having a life. I was intentional about it in law school. I was not one of those people who like never went out or like I went out my 1L year. I don't know why people make it seem like you can't. I hung out with my friends who were non-lawyers. I think it's very important to have non-lawyer or non-law school friends. And I took that into being in Big Law. I remember I went on a vacation, maybe I was in the firm for like 4 or 5 months actually. And people at other firms, I remember, were like, oh my God, like, you're going on a vacation. And I was like, yeah, I'm in the Bahamas enjoying my birthday. Like, you know, like, I'm sorry that I have a life. And so it was always very important for me to have that balance. Sometimes it's hard. Like the hours are long. And sometimes you can't do that. Sometimes you can't go on vacation because your case is in like a really crazy place. But the minute I have downtime, I do not go and seek out more work. like, it's vacation time. So it was hard, but not as hard, I think, as it may have been for other people, because I'd already been very intentional, even in law school, about like carving out time for myself, carving out time to spend with my family and friends. And so I just kept doing that even at the firm. I will say, I think it depends on what firm you're at. Some firms have a culture where there is an expectation that you are just working every moment that you're not sleeping. My firm does not have that culture. Like, I know the kind of the culture at the firm is like, if you've done like a really big trial or done something that's like very time like intensive, like the expectation is that you'll take like a little bit of a break afterwards. And so it's a little bit easier, I think, at my firm than at other firms. But in general, you know, I think it's just about learning how to take control of your career, learning when to say no. Again, I think that's firm specific. Some firms, I don't think the culture allows
you to use. You can't say no.
I'm not advising everyone to go. Maybe I am advising people to say no more. I don't know. But like, you know, keep in mind where you work. But I work in a firm where I can say no to like work if I'm busy and I don't have time or capacity. But sometimes it's hard to say no. When I was a first year, I don't think I said no as much. I think I would always be like, yeah, sure. Like, I don't know if I can, but okay. But now as a third year, I'm like, that sounds like a really interesting matter, but I just don't have time for it. And like, I'm better at it. So it just takes practice. But it also takes working in an environment where people allow you to do that, right? Or like, you feel comfortable doing that. So I will say it was harder as a first year to like say no. And also it was hard to figure out how much time things took. Cause I might be like, oh yeah, I could totally do all this stuff. And then you're like, oh wait, being on a case, you know, even when you think the case is over, it's not over. There's always something that happens. And so now I'm better at being like, oh no, like I know how long it'll take me to write this motion. So I can't take on, you know, X, Y, or Z. But it's really just about, just to make it short, like concise, it's about knowing when to say no, understanding like what your capacity is, what you're capable of doing, and just talking to people, like being like, hey, senior partner, you want me to do this, this, and that, but I also have this, this, and that. Like, do you think that makes a lot of sense? And so it's just about communicating. But I'm very strongly about having a social life. I refuse to be that person who only works day in and day out. I don't think that's a way to live life at all. And I don't think that's a way to like achieve whatever goals one has for themselves.
And I actually want to go back to that, because what you said earlier, you said that you were intentional about it in law school. And I mean, so was I. I went out 1L year. I tell all of my mentees, I'm like, yeah, I was out once a week, sometimes twice a week. I went out. I did not just do school. But you said that you were intentional about it in law school, and you were intentional about it once you started working. And this might be a little kind of a hard question to answer, but I guess, do your best. but just interested in like, how can people be intentional? You know, I feel like you and I we're social people. We like going out. We're not gonna, you know, die, but like some people, maybe that's just not their personalities. That's not them. And so it's a little bit harder to kind of just do it. So I guess like, what advice would you give to people who it's not an innate characteristic of themselves?
Yeah, I would say the same way that you organize your school schedule or your work schedule, you make a to-do for like what you need to get done for your like, you know, career or whatever. I do the same thing for like socializing. Like I make sure to carve out time to be like, I'm going to spend this time not working. Like I am going to go hang out with my friends. So yeah. If I'm making a to-do list of all the things I got to get done this week, like having a life is on that to-do list. And so when I say I'm intentional, it's like, I'm like, okay, so Saturday from, you know, 1 to 5, I'm not going to work. I'm going to grab drinks with a friend, or I'm going to Sunday brunch or whatever. But like, I make sure that it is just as important. I mean, it's not just as important. Like clearly, you know, brunch with my friends will probably have to get canceled once or twice. like yeah. That's the reality. But I at least try to like put it in there in the schedule, and I try to plan things out ahead of time. It's easier with my friend groups that are also lawyers, because we kind of understand how our lives are. And so like a lot of times people will like put things on my calendar. Like I have friends put brunch on my calendar. Like I'm putting this here, so it's reserved for brunch. And so if it's on my calendar and there's something that comes up that isn't like time sensitive at work, like I might be like, I have plans. I have plans, you know, that are important to me. Just as it would be important if like, I don't know, anything else. I think it's a little bit harder too when you're single, because most people expect like I think people who have like kids and stuff, it's like, oh, I have to go watch Timmy's baseball game. But it's like, well, me getting brunch with my friends is equally as important. So it's going on the calendar as time away from work. And so that's how I try to be intentional about it. But like, I mean, I'm not saying things don't ever get canceled. Like sometimes work emergencies happen. But you know, for people who are not really good about like being social creatures, I think just like being like, hey, I have these people in my life that care about me, and I should reach out to them. So like once a month, you know, I will reach out to people who are important in my life and like check in on them, and like offer to grab coffee or dinner or brunch or whatever I have time for, and be involved in that. Because I think life's really short, and if anything COVID's taught us, it's like you want to spend time with the people you care about. So like, yeah, just try to fit that in somehow in your crazy schedule.
Mm-hmm. And then the second thing that you talked about that I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper into, because I was actually like right before we hopped on, I was on a call with someone who's interested in a firm, and he asked me a question about, you know, how do you, when you're doing these callbacks, when you're doing these screeners, how can you really get an idea of what the culture is like at the firm? And I was explaining to him how to do that. And something you mentioned, you said that some firms will expect that when you're not sleeping, you should be working. And so I'm kind of interested in, how do you think that folks can go about like sussing that out? How do you know when a firm has that work nonstop culture?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, because I kind of, when I was in their shoes, went off more of the stereotypes, which is like, oh, New York firms are super intense that way, and like DC firms aren't. And I don't know if that's even true, because I've never worked anywhere else. But I think the best way to get a sense of that is to just to talk to associates that work at the firm, and talk to a lot of associates, because not everyone's going to be honest with you. I am a very honest person, because I don't see the point of deceiving anyone. Like, I want the person who comes to the firm to actually like working at the firm. And it doesn't make sense if you like are like, oh yeah, the firm's super lax, and then they get there and they're like, what is this? And they leave. But try to talk to as many associates as you can. Try to find, if you know someone who knows someone, you might get like more of a better perspective. Another thing I did a lot was I tried to find associates who no longer worked at a firm, but maybe worked somewhere else. And I'd be like, okay, so like you left. So
why?
Why'd you leave? That's the 411. And one thing I really like about my firm is that for the most part, people you talk to who have left never had anything negative to say about it. And I thought that was like a huge green flag. I was like, oh, wow, people left either because, you know, they wanted to leave DC or they wanted to do different kind of work or, you know, whatever. But it was never like, oh, the firm's culture or anything like that. So I tried to get the 411 from people who are no longer there if you can, which is kind of harder to like maneuver. But, you know, you find people who you look at their bio and they've been to a couple different firms and you can talk to them about like that, the other firms that they worked at. Mm-hmm. I think another way to get a sense of the culture of the firm is to talk to partners. I mean, you know, partners are at a different place at the firm, but yeah. When you talk to them about their expectations of associates, I think it's a good way to get a sense of like, what do they think an associate's life is supposed to be like? And, you know, at least at my firm, there are partners who are like, oh no, like, you know, I want my associates to like, have a life. I want my associates to like, you know, they don't want you to burn out because they want you to stay long term. And so that is something that I do. I always ask partners like what their expectations are from associates and like what is a good associate to them and what is a bad one. And if a partner is like a good associate, someone who like works day in and day out and sacrifices themselves, you know, then I'd be like, you know, that's fine. That's totally fine, but I'm not going to be a good associate then because that's not me.
That's not me. Yeah.
I ain't sacrificing nothing. So, you know, I do ask that question, but I think the best way is to talk to as many associates as possible. And talk to people who summered at the firm. I mean, it's harder during COVID because it was remote, but like, you know, even though I was a summer, like I got to see associates. I mean, I got to see if they were they also at happy hour or were they stuck in the office till like 2 a.m, right? Like,
yeah.
Can observe that looking at associates and seeing whether or not they're genuinely happy. Like, do they seem like someone who has friends? Do they seem like someone who does have, when you ask them how their weekend is it, oh, I work the entire time every single weekend? Or is it, you know, I got to do X, Y, and Z. So that's another good way to figure out firm culture.
Mm-hmm. And like, I guess kind of going off of the culture timeline here, is the big law life similar at all to law school, or is it like a complete 180?
I was just thinking about this the other day. I think law school does prepare you a bit for big law because you are working a lot in law school. I mean, it's not work, right? Mm-hmm. You're not getting paid, but like you are spending a lot of hours studying and preparing. And so mm-hmm. I do think to a certain extent it does prepare you, but I would say that you are definitely working a lot longer hours as a lawyer than you are sort of studying for law school. But I found mm-hmm. law school to be more mentally stressful than being a lawyer. I think there's a lot of like self-imposed anxiety that comes from being in law school that I don't have as a lawyer. I don't know if that's just because at some point you just got to be like, this is exhausting being this like mentally drained. But I would say like the hours are definitely longer in big law than they are in law school. I would say, you know, like finals week or whatever in law school is very similar to me to like getting prepped for trial. Like it's just like when you're getting ready for trial, it's like
home stretch. Yeah,
this is all you're doing, you know, this is like your focus. But then once trial is over, it's kind of like when you get to go on break. Well, it depends on your law firm, but like at least at mine, it's like, okay, and now break, you know, and now there's a little bit of some calm, you know, take 2 weeks off or a week maybe off and like forget to be a lawyer for a second. And then you come back and then it's like, you know, you get back to it. So I think they're similar, but I will say that I think the hours at big law are definitely worse, but with the caveat mm-hmm. that like sometimes in big law there are slow days and they are wonderful. I don't feel like in law school there was ever like a slow day, like or like a day where I had like nothing I had to do. Mm-hmm. Those are far and few between in big law, but they do happen sometimes and they're great. Yeah. And I take full advantage of them. Like if I have a day where I'm like I just turned in this motion and my other cases are kind of quiet today, like I can go like hang out. So I don't know if that happens as much. And I don't remember it happening as much in law school. I feel like there was always something.
It doesn't. Like I think that was probably one of the hardest things for me to adjust to this summer. It's like when I didn't, like when I turned something in and I didn't have anything else and I was waiting for feedback, I was just kind of like, okay, like, what do I do? Do I just sit here? And I think we talked about this. I was like, do I just not do anything?
And I was like, you do nothing. It's so weird. As a first year, I struggled with that when I had like a slow day. And I remember talking to people at the firm being like, what do I do? Like, do I reach out for more work? And people were like, no, do not do that. Like, don't do that. Like, just sit in the nothingness. And I couldn't do it as a first year. It was so uncomfortable. But now as a third year, I'm like, oh, I'm about to go watch some Netflix. Like, I am very happy to have a day because tomorrow's going to be busy. Like, I guarantee you have one slow day. And then the next day, like, you get a bunch of emails. So I have learned to like sit in those days and just be like, I'm so happy for this moment. And, you know, no, don't go out and ask for work. Don't seek out. It will come to you.
Trust me. Yeah.
And so I don't think you get that in law. I don't remember ever having that in law school. So, you know,
No, it's like, and you, I really think you don't have it in law school. And when, even when there may be an occasion where you do have it, it's like, you get a guilt feeling because it's like, you know, there's something you can always be doing and it's like, you can always be studying, but it's like, do I need to be,
you can always be taking a practice exam. You can always be, sure. And like big law, I think that exists too. And I think there are people who will like, be like, oh no, like I want to, you know, I'm going to go work. I'm going to work. Right. And again, firm culture, some firms, there is an expectation that you'll bill, you know, 7-8 hours every single day. My firm does not have sort of the expectation that you must, like, if there's work, you're going to be doing it, but don't make up work for yourself. But you know, some people aren't good with that. They're not good in sitting in that, like, just like that emptiness, which I think is why they become leaders. But I am learning to embrace it when it happens because it's so far and few between. So it's like nice to have a day where it's like, you know, I'm not on vacation, but I'm just like, I'm relaxed.
And I think my listeners would be upset if I didn't ask, but generally speaking, since we're on the topic of work, do you think, cause you mentioned, you know, it is more work than in law school and longer hours. So I'm wondering generally, is the work commensurate with the pay, do you think?
Oof, wow, that is a good question. You know, I will say, I think it is only because I come from a family of sort of like blue collar workers. And I would say that I think both my parents work extremely, extremely hard in jobs that require like physical, like as well as mental like strain, and they do not make anywhere near as much as I do. And so I come from a different perspective where like I come from a lot of family members who I think work very, very hard, but just, you know, don't make anywhere near what I make. And so I think lawyers can be a little whiny sometimes about like, oh, we work so hard and like we deserve all the money in the world. It's like a lot of people in the world work really hard and never make good money, right? So because I'm coming from that perspective and I didn't come from a family like of like wealth and affluence, I think that the pay is, I think we work really hard, but I think we are paid very well for that. I shouldn't say that just because someone from the firm is listening, like, no, we're not paid enough, pay us more. No, in all seriousness, like I have very few real complaints about the pay. I know that's a constant conversation, right? And, you know, people are always like, oh, like this firm just gave out this big bonus and this firm just gave out this big bonus. But it's like, guys, like we're not working as hard as like a lot of people in society. Like, you know, it's mentally, it is a lot of work, but like, I am not physically lifting things. I'm not doing labor. And like, you know, I have no complaints about the pay, and I think we are paid well. And I think that like, because we are paid well, we are expected to work. Like it's corporate law at the end of the day, right? Like that's how the firm makes money, is by us, our labor. So yeah, I think we're paid well for what we do.
And so sticking on the topic of work, when you, like, I guess your first and your second year at the firm, and maybe even now as a third year associate, how do you ensure that you're getting good work assignments? Is it like your own doing? Did you kind of seek out the help of any mentors? And what should other people do when they're coming into the firm?
Yeah, that is a really great question and something that I am still figuring out. I would say I'm very open and very vocal now. I wasn't, as a first year, I kind of was like, I hope good work will just land in my lap. Like, I just... No, like, I don't want to, like, I'm not as assertive. But it, and it did to a certain extent, but like now I'm like, okay, I'm, you know, I'm a little bit more senior. Here's what I need. I want to do this, 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 and that. And I'm very vocal with like my sponsor mentor, who is amazing. She's wonderful. And like, she's someone that I feel very comfortable being like, here are the opportunities that I'd like to get before I leave to clerk again. And like what I need to feel comfortable coming back. And she's been really helpful about like helping me think about ways and strategies to get those opportunities. I, you know, am pretty vocal with the people that I work with on my teams. I try to be like, hey, like, I'd love to be the one to do this, or I'd love to do this, or I'll take a stab at this opera, at this thing. Like, I'll draft this portion of the motion. And so like, I think you're always going to have to be your biggest and your strongest advocate. So being really vocal about what you want, opportunities that you want, trying to figure out who the right people are to like get those opportunities. I'll give like an example. I really wanted to do media cases my first year at the firm. Like, I really, really wanted to, but like I was just so awkward about it. And so like I would like casually be like, yeah, like I really like media work, like it's cool, like if anyone wants to give me some. And I never got it. I never got it my first year. And so when I came back to the firm after clerking, I was like, no, like I want media work. And so like I talked to the partner who does the media work, and I was like, hey, like I want to do media work. And he was like, cool, I'll keep in mind. And then like 2 months later, I was like, hey, I still want to do media work. Like, what's up? Yeah. And he's like, no, I got it, I'll keep you in mind. And then like a month later, I was like, no, but really, like I really want to do media work. And then like a case just came in, and now I'm doing media work. And so it's like, you know, you have to advocate for yourself. You have to like be consistently like, you know, every time you think something is like a maybe, be like, okay, but when are we going to turn that maybe to a yes? And sometimes it can be hard, but I'm at a point in my career where I'm like, I know what I want, and I'm just going to keep asking for it until a door opens up. And, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't getting it because they didn't want me to. It just like, there wasn't a case where it made
sense. It had to come in. Right.
Had to come in. It has to be, you can't just make up a case out of nowhere. But because I was so adamant, by the time a case did come in, I was the first person that he thought of to be like, you know, consistently asking for this work. And now I really love the case I'm on. I think it's super interesting. I would do another one. And, you know, I've been vocal about that too. Like, oh, I really like this. And like, once this case is over, like, think about the next one for me too. And obviously there are other associates who want to do it. And so, you know, the firm has to back that out. But you've got to advocate for yourself, and then find people who will advocate for you. Find people who will say like, you know, she did really great work on this other thing, so yeah, you should let her work for you, because she's a great associate. She's on top of it. Her deliverables are on time. She's a good writer. So finding people who you can do good work for, but are also the kind of people who will speak openly about you. I'm lucky to have, I have two partners. They're both women who like, I think are really good advocates for me, and like really go out of their way to like talk to people about how great I am, which I love. Really, it's me having to advocate for myself a lot too. So
yeah. I'd say that. How do you build the confidence to become such a strong advocate for yourself? I feel like, at least for me, it's a little bit innate, and that I'm, you know, pretty outspoken, and I'm not just gonna, like, if I want something, I'm gonna go out and get it and ask for it. And, you know, like for my opinion, or in my head, it's like, you know, the worst they can say is no. And, you know, and I think like doing this podcast actually has helped me like even more. So I never really had a problem with it, but it's helped me even more so now. Like, I think, you know, Vanessa, because I literally just cold emailed you like before I even knew who you were, but anyway, I think the podcast has helped a lot, because, you know, it's like when I'm asking people to interview, it's like the worst they can say is no. But you talked about how your first year, you know, you were a little more shy about it. How did you build that confidence to become such a strong advocate for yourself and make sure you're getting the work that you want in order to steer your career path?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so yeah, I was super shy about it at first, and I wasn't as vocal. I do think taking the break from the firm and clerking really helped, because I came in being like, I've clerked, I'm so great, which like, to be fair, like there's still a lot of learning to be done. And, you know, being back at the firm is real humbling. But I think it takes time. If you're not naturally like a sort of a vocal person, it takes time, I think, to be confident in your abilities. I'm always working on it. I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, like sometimes I'm still like, oh, this partner's super senior, like I'm a little nervous talking to them. But then I'm like, they're a human being just like I am, you know, like, you know, and I try to dispel sort of the mythicalness of Bingwa a bit, but it really just takes time, and it takes getting comfortable with people. It takes having people give you like good feedback. Like once I had a, like I have a partner who's like really great about giving me positive feedback. I love it. And so like enough times of her kind of like gassing me up a bit. I'm like, you know what? I am great. I am a good
You know, everyone needs like that one person. Yeah,
I have her in my corner and I love her. And like, you know, sometimes you do need another partner who's like, okay, here are all the things that you can work on and be better. But you know, she really kind of built my confidence for me to be like, you know what, like I got this lawyer thing down. I mean, I like, I'm being dramatic, like there's so much that I'm still learning, but her having her in my corner has really helped me be more confident in myself. And I think what you said is right. Like the worst someone can say is no. And I don't imagine anyone being like, no, I don't want to work with you. Like I just, and even if they did, like, all right, fine, cool. There's a million other people at this firm I can work with before. I mean, if someone said that to me, I'd be like, wait, why? What's going on? yeah, it just, it really, if you don't have it naturally, which I didn't, like it really just takes time. It takes working on your skills so that you have like real concrete reasons to be like, oh no, like I should be trusted because, you know, I've done this on my own and I've done this and I've done that and I've done this successfully. And so like, you know, having reasons to back it up. With all that said, we haven't talked about it, but I do want to talk a little bit about imposter syndrome, which I feel like a lot of associates have. And I find that a lot of like people of color tend to have in this like community. Talking to like partners and finding out that even they have imposter syndrome, and they sometimes feel like, oh my God, what am I doing, really helped me build my own confidence. Because I was like, if this person who was like amazing, you know, still kind of has these like feelings of I don't know what I'm doing, like it's definitely okay that I'm a third year and I don't know what I'm doing. You know, also I wasn't joking, clerking did help build my confidence. You see a lot of lawyers while you're clerking, some are amazing and others are not. And you're like, well, if this guy can practice law, so can I. If this is what this person wrote, like I could do that. Like I could write emotion. So just building your confidence. And it doesn't have to come, you know, naturally or on day one. I don't expect anyone to come into a firm the first day being like, I'd like to, you know, argue this motion to dismiss. I mean, you shouldn't do that. But after time, you're gonna be like, no, like I know what I'm doing and I'm good at this, and like you should give me opportunities. So
yeah, all of that makes sense. And the second part of my question was kind of the second part of what you touched on. You talked about your sponsor and how you had those two women in your corner advocating for you and putting your name in rooms that, you know, you weren't in. And I talked about it briefly on episode 4, but didn't go into too much detail with it. But I'm kind of interested, how can you, and this is kind of something that I'm still figuring out as well, like how do you go about finding someone to be that person for you and to advocate for you? Like, because it's when that person isn't assigned to you in a way, it's, you know, it's a little more difficult, I feel like. Just how do you know, or how do you go about it?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. I will say that for me, it fell into my lap a little bit. I don't even know how I got on the matter. I don't know where she found me. I think she, I don't even, because like at my firm or our firm, I guess, the way you get work is like, you can either reach out to partners and say like, you know, do what I did with the media partner and say like, hey, I'd love to work for you. Or sometimes partners reach out to you and are like, hey, we need someone. So I don't remember. I want to get, I guess that she may have reached out to me, but I just, I did a case with her and like, it was super interesting. It was just, it was her and another partner and me and a senior associate. And like, I just did good work for her. Like, that's all it was. I did good work. I was thoughtful and she just really enjoyed working with me and I really enjoyed working with her. And so when I got back to the firm, she was the first person I reached out to. And I was like, hey, like, I really love working with you. You know, I didn't know at the time if she felt the same way, but I was like, I really love working with you. And like, I'd love to do another case with you. And like, you're the first person I'm reaching out to. I actually did it before I got back to the firm. I was like, it's the first person I'm reaching out to. Like, I'd love to work with you again. And I think from there, we just kind of built like a good rapport. And I actually asked, I actually requested her be my mentor, like officially, because I felt like, I don't know, I was so awkward about like how to do the informal mentorship thing. So I just was like, I'll make it formal. So she like knows I was like mentoring from her. So I reached out to people and I said, like, I'd love for her to be my formal mentor. And, you know, she has been super helpful, like in terms of long-term big picture career things that I, you know, have not really thought about. Cause I'm more like, as a junior associate, I'm just like, I want to do good work. I want to have good opportunities. Mm-hmm. I haven't thought really about like long-term career strategy. Mm-hmm. And she's been really helpful with that. So that was like my formal mentor. My other one, I would say, I've just been on so many cases with that partner. And so it just mm-hmm. happened naturally. It just, I don't even know how I've never even requested to, I don't know. It's just naturally, like, we've been on so many cases together. We've gotten to really know each other. One thing that was like hard for me at first was like opening up outside of like just talking about work. And so like, I think mm-hmm. that's really helpful when they get to know you as a person. So like, I talk about my personal life, not everything, but you know, things that are conducive to talk to partners with at work. And so just building that like natural, genuine relationship can create that mentorship, right? So I think a lot of times people aren't like trying to genuinely connect with people. It's just like, what can you do for me? And I'm not good at that. That's why I always said I was bad at networking. Like, I don't know how to do the whole like, you know, I need this from you. But when you find people that you just click with and that you have a good relationship with, like, it can build like a very natural mentor-mentee experience. So mm-hmm. I don't have like a great answer for like how to get a mentor. But I think just doing good work will mm-hmm. get people to notice you. And then from there, like trying to work with people like and like verbalizing that you enjoy working with someone and that you want to continue working with them will have them more interested, I think, in you and like want to help you. I did it.
And I'm interested, and I think the listeners will be interested as well. I mean, when I say I'm interested, what I mean is I think it's a good thing to talk about in terms of shedding color on not only the big law life, but just kind of in the legal field and career in general. And so I'm just wondering, are your mentors from the same cultural background as you?
No, I don't even think that there are enough of them to be from the same background. Mm-hmm. They are not. They are both women, though. So mm-hmm. there's that. But they're not. And, you know, I won't sugarcoat that there just aren't a lot of people. There aren't a lot of Black partners. Mm-hmm. There aren't a lot of people of color.
Yeah. Can you talk about, like, if that was something, you know, that factored into your analysis? Or, you know, because I think some people, they're like, well, my mentor, they have to be like my skin color, they have to be my cultural background, or like, we have to have some type of something in common for them to be that person for me. And that's just not true. And that's why I wanted to ask the question. Yeah. So just wanted you to like expand on that.
I think that'll shoot you in the foot if that is, if you only are looking to be mentored by people who are Black, mm-hmm. because I mean, if you can find them, that's awesome. And like, I think that's a resource to absolutely have, but to shut off somebody because they're not, I think that's a poor move. Mm-hmm. you will be surprised who can be your biggest advocate and who will.
Yeah, absolutely. Be there
for you. So you should be open to that. Like I said, neither of my mentors are Black. Mm-hmm. It would be lovely to have a Black mentor, and I'm actually doing this program outside of the firm that I now have two mentors from there. I haven't met them yet, so it's very new, that are Black. And mm-hmm. so like, it's not like I'm not saying don't seek that out. I think it's important to seek out Black mentorship, because there are going to be certain things that you can only talk to another person who, you know, looks like you. But I would definitely say like, be open to like anyone being your advocate. Yeah. Anyone having your interest at heart, especially if you're going on a big law, like we are the minority. And so I don't know how realistic that is to only expect that from, like if you're at a firm, there's only one Black partner. I mean, I guess you're going to like, you're going to be my mentor, but you might not even click with that person, right? Like that might not even
right.
be that like you feel closest to or you're most comfortable with. So I encourage people to be more open-minded on
that.
For sure.
And I think that's, I've said it before on one of the other episodes, but some of my biggest advocates and biggest mentors have been people who are the complete opposite of me. And by complete opposite, I mean white males. So, you know, that's why I wanted to ask you about it and kind of, you know, really hammer that home, that that's not something that people should kind of be focusing on when they're not only going into big law, but just in their careers in general. So
for sure. I remember when I was a summer, you know, you get like an associate buddy, and I was like, I know they're going to give me a black woman, because that's all these firms ever do, is they just pair you with another black person. Like, you guys are going to be best of friends. And I was like surprised that my firm, my associate buddy was like a white guy. And I was like, oh, that's different. Cause all my other friends at firms have been paired with black people. And I remember when I talked to the firm, they're like, y'all are going to find each other anyways. So like, here's someone that you may not actually talk to before. And like that you can, and I ended up loving my associate buddy. He's no longer at the firm, unfortunately, but like, we actually had a lot in common. And I enjoyed getting to, and I probably wouldn't have met him otherwise. And he was great.
Yeah.
And so I actually appreciated the firm wasn't just like, oh, you're black, they're black, the end. Mm-hmm. Like, you
Absolutely.
Know, there is definitely, I will say, I am probably very close to black associates of the firm.
Yeah.
So there's definitely something there, but like, I have other things other than my race, and like, I can
mm-hmm.
outside of my race. Yeah. So I say open to all, but I recognize the lack of like, you know, black associates and partners at all big law firms. And so I do try to like invest when I can. I'm like the people, I'm pretty junior myself, but to people who are junior mm-hmm. than me, I try to like invest in them. I try to like take the time to like, if I think of a good opportunity, I might be like, oh, here's a good opportunity for this person. So I do recognize like the importance of having black mentors, and I'm hoping to be a good black mentor one day, once I'm no longer a baby lawyer. But you know, I say find mentorship wherever it comes to you, and mm-hmm. do not close a door on yourself that way.
And so in the big law sphere, what advice would you give to, I guess, like up and coming? So like, I guess like my class, kind of, we're going to go in next year. So, well, I guess it would be this current class of 2021, and then also 2022, like who are people who are, you know, getting ready to go into big law. What's kind of like your biggest piece of advice going into their first year?
Whew. Biggest piece of advice is to, let's see, I want to say something really thoughtful. I think for me, the most important thing is to remember that you too are supposed to be getting something out of this experience. I think it's really easy to get sucked into big law and think like, oh my God, like I'm so grateful to be here, and like, what can I do for them? But like, you have to look out for yourself too. So think about what you are trying to get out of this experience and try to make sure you get it, whether you're in big law for a year or 2 years or 3 years, or you want to be there, you know, and make partner one day, like make sure that you are getting out of it, whatever it is outside of the money, like that is supposed to be, cause you're going to get, the money's coming, right? The money's coming once you're big.
It's there.
I always say I want for not, but you know, whether it's like, you really want to go to trial, or you really want to draft motions, or you, whatever it is that you really want to do, make sure that you're advocating for yourself and getting those opportunities, because you want to get as much out of it as you are giving. Because they gonna take, okay? They are not paying you there to look pretty. They are gonna take. So make sure that you also are thinking about yourself. And I would say one thing I didn't do until like someone at the firm told me to do it was like have a checklist of things that you want to accomplish, because that'll help you sort of like focus in on like what you haven't done yet that you want to do and what you need to do. So like I always have a little checklist of like, here are the like 5 things that I really want to do as a junior associate. You know, like I really want to take a deposition, I really want to defend a deposition, I really want to write a motion. And once I've done one, it's like, okay, check, awesome. And like focusing on like those substantive opportunities that you want, assuming you want them. Cause like I said, I know there are people who are like, I am just here for the money. And that is fine. That is fine too. That is not me, but that is totally fine. And if that's the case, then you can check out all the advice they gave you and just kind of like, you know, collect your checks and work hard.
No, I think that's really, really good advice. And it's the perfect transition to the final segment. So in this segment, I'm just going to ask you 4 questions. I want you to say the very first thing that comes to your head.
Okay.
So first question is, how can law students best set themselves up for success?
The best way to set yourself up for success is try, this is not easy, but try to find balance in your life. You do not want to break and like, you know, crash and burn early. So try to find balance, work hard, but also play hard, I think is the best way to deal with that.
Work hard, play hard.
Work hard, hashtag work hard, play hard.
How should law students choose what extracurriculars to get involved with?
Ooh, pick what you actually like and not what you think you need to do to check off any boxes. Do things that you think you'll enjoy and be open to trying new things. So don't think about, oh, like I need to do this to do. No, just do what you enjoy. Do what you think is gonna be interesting, because then you'll be more passionate about it and you'll be able to talk about it better and you'll just be a happier human being.
What is one person or one thing that every law student must have?
One person or one thing?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. One person or one thing. Every law student should have just a, I don't know. Oh God, this is hard. One person or one thing that every law student should have. I think it's important for every law student to have a support system. Whether that, for me, it was my mama. There's a lot of crying to my mama and my friends, but just have someone that is a non-law student, non-lawyer, non-associated with this crazy life we've chosen to engage in, that is in your support system, that can like bring you back to reality, that like your problems are not that serious, like your first world problems are not that major. So you need everybody needs my mom.
Everyone needs your mom. Everyone call Vanessa's mom.
Call my mom. She'll tell you.
Last question. How do you relax while in law school, or how did you relax while in law school?
Ooh, I traveled a lot. I'm huge into traveling. I'd love to be on some Caribbean island somewhere. So when I could do that, I did. When you aren't able to go on a Caribbean island, the way I relax is either, again, my friends like reaching out and just being like, let's go grab drinks. Or binge watching lots of Netflix is also very exciting and a great way to relax from a stressful day.
I can concur on the traveling part. I love traveling, particularly to Caribbean islands. So
yes. That's like, and it's possible to travel often. I actually recently counted. Since I started my career, I've been to 10 countries. Okay. So I've been out here.
That's wild.
I've been out here in these streets.
Vanessa is like traveling in purses. That's
fine. You know, I do have my work laptop with me most of the time, so you know there's that. But I love to travel, and I could not do a job that did not allow me to do so. And luckily, this job, especially like with I think the remote working, makes it a little easier.
Yeah. All right. Well, Vanessa, that brings us to the end of the interview, and this was really, really great. Thank you for coming and allowing me to interview. It was truly a pleasure.
Thank you for asking me. I was so excited about it. I hope I didn't sound crazy.
No, I think people will really, really enjoy this episode. You gave a lot of really good advice and kind of insight into, you know, the black box that big law is. I think we all have like preconceived notions. And so it's nice to kind of open that up and, you know, kind of like break down some of the barriers or, you know, the thoughts that may not be true. So
yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, I think women like us, it's great to have, and I include you in the like bit because you've summered now, but like I think it's great because we are kind of defying stereotypes of like what it is to be in big law, and not just like the fact they're a black woman, which is in and of itself, you know, defying stereotypes, but just like regular normal people with personalities, like like idea that we don't exist and everyone's a robot, and it's like, no, I, you know, I have fun, I have a life, you know, we go out.
Yeah. It's so funny. I was talking about this yesterday with some of the other summers, and it's just like, you know, people think you can't simultaneously be smart and, you know, have fun. It's like, no, it doesn't work. You gotta, it's like they're not mutually exclusive, like I'm both.
Exactly. We're fun, I think.
I think so too. I think so too. So who knows? Maybe other people will agree. Maybe they don't, but it doesn't matter.
Because everyone's like, they're not fun at all. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. All right. Well, thanks, Vanessa. Thank you guys for listening. I will leave Vanessa's information in the show notes so you can reach out to her if you so choose. And I will see you guys on my next one. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.